the July 9th, 2024 South Jordan Planning Commission meeting. We have our entire commission present this evening. We've got representation from different departments of city staff. We have those who have joined us in the auditorium and online as applicants and citizens, and we'd like to welcome all. Our first item of business this evening is a motion to approve our agenda as published.
I'll move that we approve the agenda as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Bevins. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Our next item of business is to approve our minutes from the June 25th Planning Commission meeting. Any comments, updates? It looked good to me. All right, I'm ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to approve the June 25th, 2024 minutes as published.
Okay, I will second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, staff, do you have any business for us this evening?
I don't think we do.
Whoa, all right. Okay, comments from the Planning Commission members. I wish Mr. McDonald were here tonight because I'm not going to remember in 2 weeks, but I wanted to congratulate him on his promotion to Planner 2. Is that right? And then I was curious if the Planning Commission would be welcome at Mr. Day's retirement open house. Is that something, if we showed up, we'd be allowed in?
Yes, you'll be allowed in.
Okay. All right, thank you. Planning Commission members, that's all I had for now. Anything else? We'll start down there with Mr. Bishop. No. Okay, well then let's get to it. Just for those that are present, for each item, the staff will present a report to us. We will take the opportunity to allow any applicants that are present to add to that staff report or answer questions. We'll have a public comment session for each item, and at which time anybody who's joined us this evening to speak to these items and address the commission and present evidence will be given an opportunity to. We just ask that you come to the podium, state your name and where you reside for our records, and you'll be given 3 minutes to address the commission. The same opportunity will be given to those attending online if they'll turn on their camera and microphone and address the commission the same way. All right, we have one item under our administrative public hearings, and that is Daybreak Village 7A Plat 1 Subdivision Amended Subdivision Amendment. That's a lot of words that are like really similar. So Miguel, you have our staff report this evening.
Okay, there we go. Sorry about that. So this is the location for this application, this Daybreak Village 7A Plat 1, right next to southbound Mountain View Corridor. It is part of the Daybreak Plan Community Zone, so it is subject to that development agreement. Currently, the lot sits vacant with a building footprint on the north end, and there is parking on the south end. The size is approximately 3.27 acres. And so that is the proposed plat. And looking at it more closely at the two lots when subdivided, so the larger lot in blue is going to be 1.795 acres. The smaller lot will be 1.479 acres. And the applicant has indicated that they want to subdivide this property so future business owners can build their own buildings, but no development plans or any conceptual drawings were provided for this application. But with that, staff recommends approval of the subdivision amendment here since it meets city code.
Thanks, Miguel. We often hear about the density and the number of residents that are covered by this master plan, but I don't know that I know as much about the commercial aspect. Is there a limit on the number of commercial lots or acreage?
I'm not sure. Greg, do you know the answer to that question?
Not on the number of lots or acreage. There is a commercial limit to square footage of commercial uses. They're not even really close to that limit. And that's one thing that we We wish they were closer on that than they are on the housing ones. Commercial is something we want more of, but I think the right now there has been a project in for review on this previously on one of the, on one of these parcels, but it's that approval expired. But I think they're applying again for Ace Hardware on one of the two lots. I'm not sure how far along that is yet. I'm reapplying and getting going forward.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, we'll start down there with Mr. Bishop. Any questions for staff?
No.
Okay. Is the applicant, Ms. Christensen, present this evening? Is there anything you would like to add to the staff report?
Thanks for your time tonight. Nothing much that we want to add to the staff report tonight. Purpose of this plat is to subdivide it so that we can get two separate tenants on their own legal lots here. As far as square footages and planned development, we are intending on selling both of these lots currently. We do have both of them under contract with a local developer. He is working to renew the plans to construct the Ace Hardware along Mountain View Corridor. I don't know the other tenant that he's working with for the other lot, but he does plan to construct a building on that lot around 8,000 square feet. And again, he would have to meet any city code on that, as well as the requirements under the REA with Smith's. But any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Okay. I will turn it over to commissioners to ask questions. Will you just state your name? Who you yes. represent for our records?
Yes, McKenna Christensen. I represent CW Urban.
Okay, thank you. We'll start down here, Ms. Bevins. Oh man, the heat's got us mellow tonight. No. So, okay.
Lucky me.
All right, okay, so we'll open up the floor to public comment at this time. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'll invite you to come to the podium. You here to, okay. Could we get our online, do we have anybody there? Same invitation as always. All right, I'm gonna close public comment and bring it back to the commissioners. Commissioners, any discussion, concerns about this item? I agree with Mr. Schindler. Commercial out in this area is a welcome development, so this hopefully makes that happen.
I can add one little thing that when you read off the title of this item with all the amendments, it's going to be changed because it really is just 7A plat 1 subdivision amendment number 3. So that'll be easier than the way it is now. We've come to that conclusion, and Matt Jarman prompted us with that as well, saying that we noticed that it is the third amendment to this subdivision plat. So it'll be easier to, unfortunately, not any easier for you tonight, but. So.
All right.
That's as controversial as this gets.
We'll call it a win. All right, commissioners, then I think we're ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion, please.
Please.
Based on the staff report and the information collected this evening, I move that we, the Planning Commission, approve the Daybreak Village 7A Plat 1 Subdivision Amendment Number 3, file number PLPLA 20240095.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion? All right, I will second Mr. Gedge's motion, and we'll go to Ms. Crookston. Welcome, by the way.
They didn't want me talking tonight. Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Wimmer?
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Okay. This item passes 6-0. Ms. Christensen, I'd like to thank you for your time this evening. We always appreciate when applicants make themselves available for our procedures. All right, that concludes our administrative business this evening. We have one item under our legislative public hearings, and that is a resolution of the City Council of the City of South Jordan, Utah, adopting the transportation master plan for the City of South Jordan. I'm told that Jeremy has our staff report. That's a little unusual. I like it, though.
Yeah, it is. I'm not used to this, so
I don't think your mics work.
Oh, sorry. Okay, now you can hear me. We're just kind of on the tail end of updating our master transportation plan. It's been about 5 years since we did our last update, and with the recent Rio Tinto property that's been annexed into the city, also the South Valley Sewer District property that is looking to develop. It made sense to update our transportation master plan, and so that's what's been included in your packet. I invited Tim Taylor with Wall Consulting Group. That he's part of the team that's been helping us with this effort. And if it's okay, commissioners, he's going to walk us through a story map, kind of a presentation of the transportation master plan, and then we can ask questions at any time, you know, of course. But anyway, so with that, Tim will walk us through that, if that's okay, Tim.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Tim Taylor with Wall Consultant Group, and it's been a absolute privilege working on the Transportation Master Plan. For individuals like myself, that 100-page document that you've had in your packet is wonderful for me to read. I hope that you've had a chance to look through it and have some questions. We'll try and address those this evening. One of the neat things about technology is that we don't only have to have that printed document, but we have a story map through ArcGIS that's posted on the city's website, housed on your servers. So that can provide a simple way of going in and finding some of the general items that are on there, maps, things like that. And anyone in the city can jump on that and look at it, as well as yourselves. For the details, then you would probably go to that hard copy of the report. So I think what I'll do is just walk through this with you. Obviously, at any point, stop me and ask me if you have questions, or as we go through these things, feel free to stop me. This is the story map, and it can be updated as needed. We have several different sections here. You can see at the top, there's basically the introduction. These are tabs that are along the top here. Active transportation. There's a section on transit, the travel demand model, any roadway projects or intersection projects, and then finally a safety analysis. The city boundaries are growing, and in terms of annexation areas, that pink area shows future potential annexation areas as well. We looked carefully at the goals and the visions of the city in terms of what needs to be improved, what should be looked at in terms of developing and enhancing and engaging and coordinating residents and others. Demographics, boy, the city is sure growing. It grows at about a 5% rate every year. Highest growth was between 1990 and 2000, but we're still growing at a significant pace as a city. Which is wonderful and also offers some unique challenges. When we take a look at where people are going to and coming from in terms of work, this is pretty unique, but about 25,500 folks go out of the city to work, they come into work. About 28,000, almost 29,000 go out to work, and then about 3,000 stay here and work at home.
How does that compare to other cities? I was a little surprised by this, that more people don't live closer to where they work.
Yeah, good question. It really depends. So you look like a city at Murray. A lot of it depends on your employment, and retail elements of that, and regional elements. And so Cottonwood Heights, for example, has some key strategic locations, business centers along I-215, Murray City, you know, others as well. But for a community that's not in an urban area, that's a pretty traditional type number. It's interesting you look at that now versus you look at it in 2050. And in 2050, with the downtown daybreak densities and employment center, that actually starts to shift those trends of going from South Jordan to downtown Salt Lake or other urban centers in Sandy, and we actually start to see those areas coming more to South Jordan City. So that'll change as that daybreak, downtown daybreak area starts to develop. Does that answer your question?
Mostly. So who is coming into South Jordan to work? What are our main employers?
Oh, good
and
question.
Why are South Jordan residents leaving? Are they having to seek higher paying jobs to afford to live here?
We don't get into that level of detail. Really, we're interested in where are they going to and coming from and what roads are they using.
Sure.
So I don't have that information.
That's okay. I was just curious.
Okay.
While we're on this one,
yeah.
So it's one data point. I wonder, and I don't think I saw this in the report. Are there multiple data points that might show a trend over the last 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. Jeremy shared with me a few of your other questions too in regards to some of the other types of metrics that we might want to look at. The Wasatch Front Regional Council does a annual or a regular household travel survey. And they completed that in 2023. They try and do that about every 10 years. So the previous one was in 2012. And it's online. And I gave Jeremy a web link to that so he can provide that to you. And it has quite a bit more information related to travel distances, automobile ownership, household sizes, a lot of the data that you're talking about here that's more regionally related and more land use related versus the transportation side of things that we're doing.
Sure, and they're a regional coordinating council, right?
So, correct.
So they're looking at the big connected pieces of how highways and freeways and rail.
Yes.
Overall, a bigger system.
Correct.
We're looking at a subsystem, the city or the municipal.
Yeah, so the fine-grained points, how about this part of the city, this part of the city, that information isn't going to be available. But as a city or as an area, that information that you're talking about is more readily available.
If you'll indulge me just a little bit, and then we'll let you get back on track. As tech advances, one of the things that we've seen a change in the last 5-10 years is the ability to add sensors in a variety of places. So recently I just rented a car, had adaptive cruise control, little sensor in the front bumper. I could just leave cruise control on and it just adjusted it. So one sensor in a strategic place can give a rich set of data that enables a bunch of other things. Are we seeing... Would we be able to do something like that at a city level? This is more, think that way and say, how could we get data and take ownership of measuring our experience and not rely on a regional or other data source that may not be as frequent as could be helpful for us?
And the type of data that I'm familiar with would be like journey to work, travel type data, where are you coming from and going to with sensors, and they will track a cell phone ping, and things like that. And some cities are using that. Park City uses that to try and look at where they have people coming from and going to. Farmington Station Park area has used that a little bit. I don't know of any cities, though, on a large scale other than Park City that are doing that as it relates to travel data, origin, destination type data. But there is... that technology is advancing quickly in terms of speed data, how long somebody stays at a shopping center and then they leave, that type of thing. And so that's becoming more mainstream, I would think, over the next 5 to 10 years, that would be a technology like you're talking about that would be pretty viable.
From a data broker or something like that could be purchased on every 3 years or 5 years or every year if the council or someone decided that they wanted to provide that level of information.
Now there's great data available through Strava. which is an alternate mode, mostly bicycles. And so you can get good data on bike routes and usage there. The Utah Department of Transportation on state roads maintains a pretty good data set of that kind of non-traditional type of data that they purchase third party. And so those are available Strava commercially, and then UDOT through their website as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim and Commissioner Catmull, we also have access to Clear Mobility, Clear Guide. That's a software that UDOT's using. I'm still trying to figure out how reliable it is. It's cell phone data. It's using cell phone data to estimate the speeds, but it's tricky. It's a lot of data to sift through. So,
I like that problem.
Are you a data person?
Yes.
Yeah. Wonderful. Okay. Again, this is pretty high level. I think there's a little bit more detail in your actual hard copy report. So this first section of active transportation, you know, it's such an important element of South Jordan City and actually of the whole Southwest kind of area of Salt Lake County. This particular map, let's see if I can do this right. I'm going to get rid of this. Yeah, I'm going to close it, but I want you to see the multi-use paths, a bike lane, cycle track. These are all defined over on the left side here, but you can see each of those are designated as a different color. So a park trail, bike trail, if it's an equestrian trail. So I'm going to close that now. This is what exists right now in the city in terms of some of those different facilities. So this is take a look at what we have right now. And is very representative of where things are at. And then as you go further down, again, these are the different types of facilities that the city has that they use. When we take a look at projects that are coming up.
Tim?
Yes.
I've got a question, if you could scroll
back. Go back, yeah.
I just noticed here in Daybreak, I'm a bit colorblind, but is that a cycle track there that's kind of perpendicular to the purple line?
Do you see my cursor on there?
Yeah.
Where exactly?
Right, to the left of that, yeah.
Keep going.
I think it's red and yellow, like the purple line. And then there's the red and yellow short segment. Yes, right there.
This one.
Right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. That one. That is Lake Avenue.
Yeah.
And that is a center running bicycle and pedestrian path that's in the median.
Okay. And is that what they're going to put in after things are all torn up right now?
Things are all torn up, putting in drainage in there. And that what it used to look like, it will go back to that.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, I think that as the stadium develops and things like that, the program for that median changes a little bit more to be more active than just the bike and walking corridor.
It wasn't much before. The paths were too small and that kind of stuff. So I was hoping that when they put it back in, it would be a little better.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions on what's existing now? Okay. We take a look at what the county is planning on. We take a look at what other cities are planning on and their plans. And then we kind of come up with overall plans for what would be happening in the next 10 years. That phase one, phase two, phase three, the next 10 years is the key there. And so you start to look at where some of these facilities are at, even all the way out into this area of that's been annexed with Rio Tinto down here at the bottom in this area. And you start to get a picture of, obviously, these ones that go along these lines here are canal trails, future trails in the canal. So lots of projects still to be completed as it relates to active transportation.
So I have a question.
Go ahead.
You go. I'm excited about those canal trails. Will they be paved?
That's a great question.
Yes. Yes, they will be.
All of three that they're showing there?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Yes, so right now we've finished about 99% of the Welby Canal Trail, and it's all paved.
Okay.
We're working with the Utah Lake Distributing Canal, which is the one right around 2700 West. We're trying to get an agreement with them to pave that canal trail. It's a little bit tricky because we need to get the canal companies to consent to let us, you know, do that paving and allow the public to use them. But we're working diligently to try and make that happen.
Okay. Make sure my mic's on. Some of these projects obviously are out in like newer developments. Are all of these projects fully city funded, or do we have developer dollars and other funds coming in to do these projects?
It'll be kind of a mix. Okay. Yeah. Most of the canal trails probably will be a combination of city funds and grant funding. There's also a lot of grants right now to try and build more trails. And then you know, obviously further to the west, some of those will be funded by Daybreak. The trail going through the Bingham Creek Trail, that project number 8, that one, it might be funded. Right now, UDOT's looking at that one as a possible trail network, and so that might be partially funded by UDOT, so a definite mix.
May I piggyback on her question? The report mentioned that impact fees had been calculated, but when I did a search through the entire document that was presented to us, I never found what those impact fees would be. At the bottom of some tables, there were asterisks indicating that certain projects would benefit from impact fees.
And Tim, chime in if I get this wrong, but the impact fee analysis is a separate document that will be going to City Council, but the Transportation Master Plan is what comes to the Planning Commission, and this is kind of the basis for the projects that will be happening in the next 10 years, and then from those projects that are shown on this plan, that's what is fed into that impact fee analysis to determine what that fee is. So that will be presented to City Council here in about a month, you know, depending upon how quickly, you know, we go through, well, not how quickly, but, you know, going through Planning Commission, then it'll go to City Council.
Also, the trails aren't included as a part of the impact fee analysis.
Yeah, good clarification.
Trails and the transit improvements aren't impact fee eligible, just the roadway and intersection improvements.
I have a question about 114th there. Is that going to be a UDOT project?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, right now, Commissioner Bishop, that's planned to be a 14-foot multi-use path on the south side of 114th South.
Okay, yeah, I was going to follow up with how are we going to fit that in? Is that going to be home removals?
Not home removals. It will require some right-of-way acquisition. And it's a project. It's a phase two project, so it's a ways out at this point in time. But also that 114th South project also includes an additional westbound lane. So one additional westbound lane, and then a multi-use path on the south side is what that project would be.
On these projects, just for your reference, if you click on the colored line, if I can get it to work here, then there's a table that will pop up and provide you some additional details. Whoops. On that particular project, if you're interested in exploring it more.
Okay, I have another question, sorry, just really fast. Obviously, 114 South does not only run through our city, but our projects are only showing to our city lines. Are we coordinating with like Sandy on that so that they, or Draper, whoever it is, so that it's like a seamless progression, or are we gonna see like hodgepodge construction down 114th for 10 years?
Great. Great question. And I can't make any guarantees how this plays out, but yes, we are coordinating with them. So that 114th South project, that was actually a project that was identified a couple of years ago as part of a UDOT Solutions Development project, and they engaged all the adjacent cities, you know, as part of that effort. So, yeah.
Is it the same on the canals that run
through multiple cities, or are we just focusing on ours and everybody else can do it at their own pace?
We have shared this with the other cities, and all the other cities like Riverton and Harriman are asking, hey, what are you doing? What canal are we doing next? You know, because we just finished the Welby. We have kind of been leading the effort because we're the first ones on the Welby canal. And so it seems like everybody's pretty excited about it. But the biggest thing with the canal trails is trying to find a canal company that's willing to let us pave the trail and make it open to the public. And that's what we're really trying to do.
Similarly to some of the roadway projects, the Wasatch Front Regional Council will also gather trail and transit recommendations as they look at a regional trail master plan similarly. And so that becomes something that they're trying to update regularly as well to keep everybody on the same page also.
One of the things that I'm really appreciative of in this is just seeing more balance between north, south, and east, west. And I definitely, my eyes kind of went to the current Daybreak too as well. And I had to think, like, where's the north, south there? But really there's so many paths to go through Daybreak that there's a lot of options. And that's close to where I live. And so I'm like, yeah, I feel like there's plenty of room there. So I just wanted to compliment in thinking both directions, because we don't know where the growth's going to be. You know, two decades ago, three decades ago, it was all organized around downtown Salt Lake, getting north, south. And now we're seeing much more fluidity going all the directions. And I think that's what Wasatch Front Regional Council and those other regional councils wanted to see, right? Is more balance in the system so it's not so heavy towards one point. Or 2 points.
Thank you. This doesn't show the trail that goes along Mountain View Corridor, which is on the east side, as well as the bike lanes that are on Mountain View Corridor, which is a significant north-south corridor, obviously, for bicycles. Mm-hmm. Other questions on this one? So phase two, projects and active transportation, you start to see that there aren't quite as many, but I think that is this 2700 West? Or is that 30?
It's Redwood.
Redwood. See, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Again, north south in that regard. Let me zoom out and see if you have any questions on that one.
What would be the multi-use pathway on Redwood? Now that they've restriped it, I'm not envisioning a lot that you can do besides road traffic.
There's a small, correct me if I get this term wrong, but I think it's called a small area plan in the general plan that looked at the Redwood Road corridor, and it identified like a 10-foot wide park strip and a 10-foot wide sidewalk. Okay. And after walking that sidewalk during Sojo, you know, the celebration we did, it needs a wider sidewalk and further setback from that road, because it's very uncomfortable, you know, with just a 5-foot park strip and a 5-foot sidewalk. So
anywhere you see the multi-use pathway, it means it's off the road, not on the asphalt. Only the bicycle lanes or the buffered bike lanes are generally on the roadway itself. This last one just shows phase three projects, which is primarily the Bingham Creek Trail here, going up from the county park all the way up to into Rio Tinto land here. And then a lot of the items that would be in this future development, which we really don't know anything about yet with Rio Tinto. Okay. Transit, let's talk about transit. There's not a lot of transit existing, is there? you know, we have two wonderful stations. Obviously the red line comes out through Daybreak, and then we have the Front Runner, thank you, the Front Runner station there. But bus service is not fairly limited, it's very limited. So when you start taking a look at what the Wasatch Front Regional Council and UTA have started looking at in terms of transit plans, this is a look at what they had considered. And so, and they look at things regionally to make sure that they're getting ridership, because really the key is how do we get the most ridership into the system? So we take a look at what the regional transportation plan is showing for transit projects, and then we come and we have modified that based on our analysis and also input from city council. So as an example, the yellow line that you see going east to west from I-15 all the way out, that used to come up to and go down to Lake Avenue. And when city council looked at that, they wanted to have that go directly out on South Jordan Parkway and then circulate on the west side of Daybreak. And so that change was made. There's a couple of changes, but these are key bus routes, the yellow one being a 15 minute, every 15 minutes, and then the one that's shown in purple below, it would be the, that one's on 114th South, would be 30 minute intervals, as well as a preferred alignment for the tracks extension at some point. And so those are some key recommendations. Again, most of them going east-west to service those key transit lines with tracks and Front Runner as well. Questions on this one? Yes.
So if we're with transit, if we're seeing, well, maybe the first question is, what use do South Jordan City residents get mostly out of transit? Is it work? Is it play? Is it other? Do you have a sense? I see that, you know, 2% of the people or something like that,
yeah,
tend to use it for work. That's a pretty low number. When I listen to you saying, like, we're trying to connect it so more people will use it, well, we've been doing that for decades, trying to get more people to use a transit system. Are we investing in something that the demand isn't there and we need to invert the problem or something like that so that we rethink it and get more people to use an alternative to even transit?
Yeah, thank you. So let me kind of put this in perspective. A transit capture rate of about 4 or 5% is considered really good. We have estimated that the transit capture at the new station near the ballpark, the new ballpark, would be maybe upwards of 12%, 15% for event type activities. If you look at the University of Utah Stadium and you start looking at football games and major events, then that's the type of range you're getting, is 10 to 15% capture. And even in large Portland, other major cities and urban areas, those transit captures are still in that kind of 5 to 8% even. So that's just a kind of an ongoing debate of how do we increase transit usage, make it more viable for everybody, and it becomes a difficult thing when it just because it doesn't, transit doesn't come to everybody's front door is the main problem, right?
Well, like UTA on demand, I think that's a yep. clever solution in the sense that it's a little bit like a ride sharing type solution that's affordable and operates in a restricted area so that they can, you know, focus the heavier infrastructure like rail, you know, and focus on that as the major transit solutions and then lighter weight solutions for coverage. Do you think there's room for that in this plan or any narrative? I don't remember reading any of it. I saw that that UTA was on there, but it's like thinking about blending those two together and saying, like, how do we get, we continue to expand those?
We do address that in the report, that kind of last mile and first mile type of, how do we get people that last and first mile is a key as well that's addressed in there also.
And I guess regional council is also doing similar things because it's, as they leave the city, they need the last mile and First Mile coming back.
Correct. Yep, they're very Wasatch Front Regional Council is very focused on increasing transit usage, that on-demand transit and also last mile, first mile, those types of services. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
May I make a comment? Just in my own personal anecdotal experience, having used public transportation many times, this map actually looks really good for getting ownership up. Like, you know, in our current setup, unless you live right next to the I-15 corridor, you don't even have access to public transportation, right? So actually building it out where people live so they can get from here to, you know, Front Runner, and then take the train over to Front Runner and take it into Salt Lake, and having the tracks extension line so that you can take tracks from Salt Lake down to a ball game and back again. Like, those are things that just work out really well. And I just wanted to say that I really like, you know, the phase 1, phase 3 lines going east to west as well. It's probably common sense based on where the roads are, but it looks pretty ideal to me in terms of getting from people from where they are to the places they want to go.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Can I ask a question? Sorry, I'll make it quick. Looking at this, obviously we've had a little bit of discussion, but am I right to assume that when your group and the Wasatch Front Regional Council and everybody is making the decisions on where to place the bus routes and how often, some of what's going into that are like the economic factors of where people are going. So like a 15-minute bus route needs more because they're going further. Or I don't know, are they taking those into account, like where people from our city are going? I'm assuming you guys have that data and how long it's going to take them on that route to get to where they're going, and if that factors into whether or not it's worth it for them to take transit rather than just drive.
Yes, so we have a travel demand model that is, it's the entire Wasatch Front, goes all the way down into Utah County, even though it's a different metropolitan planning organization. It includes a drive component to it where people coming from and go to it. It has a transit component to it as well. And so the big things is access to it, the density that's surrounding it, those types of things. And then UTA works on a financial model to determine how viable those things are. And that's why I'd mentioned earlier that the key for transit is ridership. And so the ability to do the last mile, first mile, to service your densest areas of your city, to make sure you're being cognizant of all income levels and that type of those types of things weighs heavily for UTA on where it ends up going. It's interesting though, because UTA in the past has kind of said, well, we'll do all of our own planning. I don't mean to say that negatively. They have done their planning carefully. They're looking more outwardly now to cities to say, well, where do you see it going? And so we get this on the map and they say, oh, okay, great. Now we have a plan. We can start looking like, and then we're on the same page, so to speak. So they've been great about letting municipalities lead out and saying, this is where, you know, we're planning on having transit. So.
And one more comment on that, Tim. This is the first transportation plan where we actually have a preferred transit route that's specific for the city. Previously, we've just kind of presented, hey, these are the existing routes from UTA. Hey, this is what UTA is planning. And so this is kind of the first time the city's really said, you know, really considered, oh, this is what UTA is saying and what UDOT's saying, but this is what we think makes more sense, you know, and so... So that's why we kind of have the third map showing the city's preferred transit plan. So
the city's now taking a more like strategic and active role in where we're going to place transit so that it works better for the city, essentially.
Okay. Yeah. And keep in mind, it's from our perspective, but then, you know, it carries weight when we send this to UTA and say, hey, this has been through a public process. It's been approved by city council, you know, and it's definitely something that UTA takes seriously and considers.
I'm really curious about the Red Line South extension and those corners. I've ridden on tracks many times, and any kind of corner causes those things to screech like crazy. I'm curious if it's going to really look anything like that, or do you guys think it might change? Or
I know going, and Tim, chime in if you have more information on this. I know going south of South Jordan, you know, to 118th South up to that purple line that's shown on the map there, that is the designated route. So there would be two bends getting out of our city, because that's kind of the preserved corridor for you know, at this point in time. And when you look at the land use and the way things are building out, that's pretty much the only way they can go. South of that, I don't know. You know, the other bends that line, you know, that the line's taking, I'm not certain on. I hear you though. But you think about it, in some areas of Salt Lake, there's quite a few bends that those trains make as well.
And they screech, like Mr. Bishop said.
Yes, absolutely.
I lived by one of them when I was at the U.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's good.
Technology's going to be great, though. The bearings are going to be quiet. I'm just kidding.
Because this looks like residential through that first turn, the northernmost turn, right?
So this turn goes through, this is the medical building, oh, okay. The U of U Medical. So most all of this is going to be commercial office type development. Then it turns and goes along the Mountain View Corridor through the power line corridor, and then turns on 118th South into Harriman, and then goes down a corridor that's been preserved already by Harriman, and that's all residential down through there. Yeah, if you've lived by one of those on a corner, you do know what they sound like.
Sandy's going to be complaining.
Or if you've lived next to a railroad. Thank you. Okay. So travel demand model, I touched on that here with Commissioner Bevins. It includes planned land uses out to 2050. And that's looking at cities' general plans, land use master plans, those types of things to pull in that land use data. And then looking at where roads are going to be at that are planned by UDOT, planned by the Wasatch Front Regional Council, planned by the cities, that they're all coordinating on that. And it, when you run this model, it will take people and take them out of South Jordan and send them to Salt Lake and send them down to Provo and send them wherever they want to go. So it knows origins, it knows destinations, and then it picks routes. And it does that for automobiles and transit. And that technology is improving as well. So it's much more sophisticated than it used to be. And Wasatch Front Regional Council does a great job with their model. Yes, Commissioner Catmull?
Well, I was going to mention that there's a quote out there that all models are wrong, some are helpful, you know, that are out there. And so I was just curious if, as you use this model to shape, I'm probably more concerned in the short-term and intermediate, how do you measure the effectiveness of that model? So in my field, we'll use like observe versus expected.
Yep.
So we'll track that. Is there anyone doing that on this model?
Yes, thank you. So when we do these at a city level, we will do a couple of things. So the city is broken into areas called traffic analysis zones. And it might be a block, a large block area that's bounded by arterial streets. And so that model is taking all of the people and employment and everything in that particular block, and it's going out to the side streets. And then sometimes it helps, though, to take that one big block and break it into four blocks, disaggregate the size of those. And so because of the grid network in Daybreak, that regional model has been disaggregated into a lot smaller blocks so that you start to be able to look at a lot more roads on there. So what'll happen is on the existing conditions analysis, the model has an existing conditions, you'll take the model output and compare it to the actual counts. And the city does an amazing job of counting, a counting program and making that count program available so that you know what daily traffic volumes are on a road segment and what intersection traffic volumes are. And you compare that to what the model is outputting. You make adjustments based on the existing, and then once those adjustments have been calibrated, then you move forward with the future conditions.
So that's for the training aspect. Do we update that like on in a year from now or 2 years from now? Do we do we measure the expected versus actual?
We don't. We usually do the updates to the master plan about every 5 years. But for example, I think Jeremy would say that he looks at that. He's watching the growth on 118 South or on South Jordan Parkway or 114 South and saying, hey, is this in line with what we are expecting? And the other thing is the model actually says, well, the congestion level is an A through an F rating, right? Level of service, I'm sure you've heard that. And so that can be obtained as well. And that's the main thing when we go through the travel demand model that we are looking at is, you know, if you look at the existing conditions in the city, green is level service A, B, or C, and then D and E are the yellow is D, and then the red is level service E. So the city existing wise is doing really well, but again, we calibrate that the type of road, the functional class of that road, the speeds. The number of lanes, the types of land use, those are all tested and calibrated before you run the future conditions. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Catmull?
It does. I'm just staring at that map and wondering what the density on the west side versus the less dense on the east side, and how a model will, you know, what do you train that on? Because there's nothing else like that here in Salt Lake.
There isn't. It's really unique.
I guess that's why we plan 5-year segments, because you know, planning is essential, but plans generally serve limited use for, you have to re-update them all the time. So.
Yeah, yes. In terms of the 2033 year, we looked at that increment. If you don't do anything to the roadway network, this has a little slider bar on it. So if you slide it here to the right, how do I grab that? Let's see. There we go. So if you slide that to the right or to the left now is existing, or if you don't do anything, right? If you don't make any improvements to the roadway network, if you slide it to the left and you include all of our phase one improvements, then you start to see how the network looks. So this starts to show you the significant benefits, because when we ran the model, these roadways that you see in red and yellow were a problem. So we look at those specifically, say, okay, what improvements need to be made, right? And then we run the model again with those improvements made in order to see what the result is in terms of the facility's level of service.
Does the model on this include anticipated growth in any of these areas?
It does, yes. Yep. So not only are you looking at the road changes, but you're growing the population, you're growing commercial availability, all of that. Yep.
And Commissioner Bevins, as part of this update, we met with Rio Tinto, Larry H. Miller, Doug Young's team to kind of get an idea on timing, you know, and how they anticipated the growth happening, and so that's what's been inputted here.
And then you go to a 2050 year, again, if you don't make any improvements. And then if you slide through and look at the improvements, including not only what was made in 2033, but the improvements between 2033 and 2050, then in 2050, these are the results that you're going to see with those improvements.
I have one more question, sorry. On this Bacchus Highway, does the realignment of Bacchus Highway, obviously it's not showing it, but does it change the traffic flow on there to improve this? Once that's finished, do we anticipate that will assist?
So the realignment is represented by this straight line here.
Oh, okay.
Rio Tinto intends to still have to use this as a roadway that'll come perpendicular to South Jordan Parkway. So it'll turn and come to line up with South Jordan Parkway. That's what's represented here. And it does help. Those improvements do help.
I have a question. On 104 South, particularly coming into Bangor, where it's the section where it's yellow right now on the view, up towards the top on
and to the right.
South
here, here, here. Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. Yep. That's it. So that, if assuming there were no changes made to the model in 2033 or 2050, you know, that would all be red. Is the expectation that the new public transportation, the bus lines, are going to be significantly impacting this? Or is there other, are there other changes beyond the bus line that will impact that road specifically?
This would include those improvements with the transit. So so that's a level service F for that whole section, right, and level service D for it afterwards for that small section. Yep.
And that's probably a low confidence level at this point because you're so many years out and models and so forth can't predict things like structural changes like work from home percentages and pandemics and
self-driving cars.
Self-driving cars, yeah. Or any disruptive things. It's assuming, it has to bake the assumptions that we have into the model. So, but it's good, right?
Correct. I mean,
Sorry. I think on South Jordan Parkway, though, it's a higher level of confidence that it's going to have issues if we don't add those additional lanes, just because of the very limited east-west roads, roads that we have available to us, and the horizon on this widening. It's a phase one project, and so that specific project, we do have a higher confidence in the modeling results. Is that
what
fair
I'm
to
saying? Is like the yellow, like we don't know what the final result will be.
Yeah, yeah.
We know there's a problem.
Yeah, the build out condition. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Sorry.
With the trip length, the number of trips change, or trip lengths, and all that. Yeah. That's why we, in 5 years, we'll probably be back doing this again.
Yes. Yep.
So you mentioned that specific project will include road widening.
At this point, it'll be a UDOT project. I don't know. I would recommend it just be a restripe because they have wide enough shoulders that they could just restripe the road. But UDOT, in some cases, has wanted to hang onto the shoulders. And so I don't know if it'll be a widening or just a restripe. When they did the previous section of South Jordan Parkway, though, to the east of Redwood Road, they chose to widen it to preserve the shoulders.
And that is a UDOT project. I'm just looking at it right now. Better to use the arrows than. Yeah, and it is a widening project on that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, as you have questions on those, what those projects are, you can click on those. And there's also a description too in the hard copy document that shows tables of those projects and what they involve and what their estimated costs are. I believe that's in there. Is that right, Jeremy? The cost is in this one, or is that just in the...
At the end of the document, there is the capital facility plan with the costs.
Thanks. So once we know, based on what that travel demand model is telling us, that's when we go through and start developing, these very specific projects, starting to put cost estimates to them. I can't get that to go away. All right. So the phase one projects are shown in here. These are phase one projects. These are all projects that will be completed in the next 10 years. Some of those are UDOT projects. Some of those are city funded projects. But the majority of what you see is going to be out towards the western side of things. Phase two. This is by phase. So the yellow or the red and the purple. Purple is phase three. And I apologize, Commissioner Bishop.
All right.
Like this 313, if it's got a three, that's phase three. The blue, the lighter blue color is a phase two. And then anything that's red is a phase one project. So this map shows it by phase.
And the project numbers also give the phase. The first number in the project number is the phase.
This one looks at them by type of project. So whether it's a new roadway or it's a widening project or it's an operational, like Jeremy mentioned, that it's a striping project type of thing. So you can look at those as well. And then we look at intersection projects. Level of service in an urban area is a lot of times based on how well the intersections operate versus everything in between the intersections. So we take a close look at that as well. This one shows the intersection projects by phase, phase one, two, and three. Each of those dots represents an intersection project. And then the second map shows it by type of project. So whether it's you're doing an intersection improvement, whether you're installing a signal, if there's an innovative intersection, those types of things.
What does innovative intersection mean?
So an innovative intersection would be probably like a roundabout or those types of things, yeah.
I think that the project, if I remember right, the project that the innovative intersection was targeted for was the two on Redwood Road. And I think the concept there at this point in time is like a continuous flow intersection.
Oh, yeah, that is
like,
it. Yep,
like what you find at by the Home Depot on Bangor down in Riverton, where you'll get in the left turn lane well in advance of the intersection. Anyway,
okay.
Probably not a fan of those, but traffic volumes kind of dictate it sometimes.
In this one, we broke, I mean, the through turn and a roundabout are innovative, but we broke those out from the two there that are on Redwood Road, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah.
Can I ask a question as well? On 40th West, you've got three purple dots in a row at those main intersections on 104th and 98th and 90th. What does intersection improvement entail for something like that?
Yeah, for those intersections, it's lane additions and striping changes through those intersections. So they'll be widened, in essence.
Like additional turn lanes? Or,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Turn lanes particularly, because 4,000 on the previous plan that Tim was showing, it shown 4,000 adding a lane in each direction on 4,000 West. And so when we do that at those intersections, we would lose the turn lane. And so that's what we would be adding, is just a turn lane there.
Jeremy, you alluded to it, but what determines if you get an innovative intersection versus like a roundabout, et cetera, these kind of non-traditional intersections? The city actually sent me to a planning seminar a couple of years ago. I went with Demir, and the keynote speaker really had nothing nice to say about roundabouts. And so that's stuck with me. Just that it took so much more attention for the average person who's not used to them, that he just didn't feel that their merit outweighed their negatives.
I would love to meet that person, because usually I find people extremely passionate about roundabouts. You know, Okay. Usually they're very well received, especially people that are familiar with traffic operations. But when the city's already built out, it's difficult to throw a roundabout in just because of the amount of real estate that it requires. And so we're kind of limited on our options. Sometimes you're forced to do an innovative intersection like continuous flow just because of the volume of traffic going, you know, to that intersection. But for the most part, we're pretty limited to just street lights because it has the, you know, the kind of the narrow footprint, you know.
Okay.
So I was just maybe a question or a comment or building on that comment. When I was distracted by this app, and not reading the full report, one of the things that I seem to notice, and I wonder if you could maybe comment on it, is looking around in those roundabout areas, it felt like a lot of the crash data, when I looked at the crash data that you might be getting to, in the safety analysis, that a lot of the major crashes in and around those areas seem to be earlier, like 2018, 19, not as many in 2021, 22. So maybe people are getting used to roundabouts, more used to roundabouts or something. I don't know if you have.
So the thing about a roundabout is that the severity of a crash is going to be much lower because it's a sideswipe type of crash versus a T-bone type of crash or a left turn type of T-bone crash. And so they're up to 80% safer. Roundabouts on a whole, 80 to 90% safer than a traditional signalized intersection, primarily because of that, the angle of the crash and the speed of it as well. So you could see more crashes at a roundabout, but they're a lot lower severity than you would have at a regular intersection or a traditional one. And we'll look at the safety items in here too. And this is kind of tough to see, these colors are, but when you start looking around the city, and the city has done a great job of limiting fatal and serious injury, suspected serious injury crashes, both from a vehicle perspective and pedestrians, bikes. It's really positive to see it. And I, let's see if I do this, try and navigate through here. So let's look at these roundabouts here in Daybreak. You can see kind of the cluster of blue crashes. Those are no injury or property damage only. And these are for a 5-year period from 2018 to 2022. Jeremy has access to a database that has crashes all the way back to 2000 and is it 10?
Yeah.
And so he can do more detailed analysis and things like that. That's made available through the Department of Transportation. But again, you'll see in those areas that I'm just going to try and zoom in on that one. And that's quite a significant thing to not see a red dot in there in any of those years. That's an arterial street.
Yeah, it's
correct.
Arterial.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so that's the kind of things that we're hoping to accomplish by having those types of intersections. And that's more of a safety type improvement versus a lot of times those innovative intersections are a capacity improvement. It's got high volumes and you need to address the high volumes or the delay that's happening. So go ahead.
Well, just we've been focusing too on like the injury and so forth. Do we have any data that talks about the dollar value of damage? I'm thinking about like a crash is a crash, right? And when you're, I guess repairs and everything else for more modern vehicles have gone up, and so do we have a dollar value to kind of like show the impact to our citizens in potentially like worried about life and safety, but there's also a financial component that people really care about as well. Like I think car insurance, automobile insurance has gone up like 25% in the last few years, 2 or 3 years, and so it's outpacing inflation by even outpacing inflation.
Amazing. So the answer to your question is yes, we do understand costs. Those are maintained by the Federal Highway Administration. And UDOT every year updates those crash costs because UDOT uses a crash analysis to decide if the benefit to the cost is good. Like, so if you do a project and the benefit, the reduction in fatal crashes is higher than the cost, you're gonna get a higher number, right? So they use their Highway Safety Improvement Program funds on projects that will have a benefit to cost ratio of like 8. So for, you're going to get, dollar wise, you'll save $8, for every $1 spent on the improvement. And those can be made available to the city. They are available to the city, and you can have UDOT help in doing crash analysis, cost analysis of improvements and things like that.
Is that even outside of UDOT roads, state roads? Does that include?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And there's more funding mechanisms right now available to us as well. There's a Safe Streets for All program that they're doing that we're looking for, potential projects where we could make significant safety improvements.
40th West. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Look at that row of dots down there.
Are there any areas that anyone wants to look at or...
Actually, I wanted to make a comment about roundabouts and safety and stuff. So I know you guys are familiar with this, but a slip lane, that's when you come up to an intersection and you're able to make, like, do a right turn without stopping or anything, right? It's just like a separate lane. And that's basically the way a roundabout works in a way. is that when you come up to a roundabout, you're heading to the right, but you're looking to the left. Does that make sense? Because you're looking for that gap. So I have a British driver's license, actually, and they have roundabouts all over the place. But they, unlike the U.S., they don't mix their crosswalks and their intersections the way we do. They put the crosswalks in the middle of the streets, like between intersections. And so one of the issues that you have with roundabouts here in the U.S. is a pedestrian, like, safety issue, right? You're not, and I see that all the time. I live in, you know, the west end of Daybreak, and it's not very safe to be a pedestrian around these roundabouts. And I love roundabouts. I'm used to them and all that kind of stuff, but I just wanted to mention that.
That's a good point. Yeah. I've noticed that as well.
I think we could use some lights, actually. I know that's not within the scope of this large document, but some of those roundabouts there in Daybreak can get pretty dark. And that's part of the problem too. But and I did have, unless somebody had any comments, I did have a comment about a particular roundabout, actually. I'm going to sound negative about roundabouts. I love them. But there was a roundabout in Daybreak mentioned in the report. And it's the one we were very much in the area we were looking at earlier. It's Daybreak Parkway and Okra Lake Road is where they come together. And it was talked about as a potential, as something we needed to keep an eye on. That's it right there. It's the roundabout on the right of the screen.
This one? No, Okra Lake. Yes, yeah, that one.
That one.
Yeah.
So as a cyclist as well, like, I don't go anywhere near this. And that's, there were two accidents involving apparently a car and a cyclist. I was just surprised, honestly, at the the report said we need to continue to monitor this intersection. I was frankly surprised. I look at that and I think this is something I want to stay away from, just because it's kind of dangerous. I can't put a finer point on it. I don't know how to, like, what it is about it that I just would want to stay away from. But I was just curious. What are you guys familiar with that particular situation? I was just curious to hear your thoughts on it.
I am not Commissioner Bishop. The first time, to be honest with you, the first time I've really considered that as an issue was when I saw it in WCG's analysis in their report, and so it's on our radar now. You know that we'll be looking into it, but I've not received any complaints about it. I never heard, you know, whenever those bike incidents did happen on that roundabout, I never heard about it, and you know, obviously it wasn't a significant enough event to, you know, to really trigger any alarms for me at this point, but it is in the report, and it will be something we'll be looking at, and that's. And those items that are in our report, I think they're great candidates for this Safe Streets for All funding that is becoming available. And so,
and I frequent that intersection frequently, but I go underneath. So I go
on your bike.
On bike underneath.
Yeah, there. Me too. I wouldn't go up on.
There are times I go up, and I know what you're talking about. Like, I am alert and attentive when I go through there, because it's coming up. You know, people. Cars coming up over the hill, they don't really see you, you know, and all that. And so I'm very careful about making myself visible in there. And but I tend to avoid it by going down and around. And that's what I try to do around any unsafe intersection is to try to get great separation between me and the cars.
Yeah.
It is good that there is great separation there, option, you know.
Yeah,
great
separation, and maybe option. It's just a training or education, or maybe it's depending on what the most common path is through there. But maybe you're talking about going Are you talking about like a bicyclist that are going up and up the hill? And
I would assume so. I don't know the details of the of the two accidents. But yeah, just for those that are not familiar, you're coming up the hill, coming from the right, and there's a bike lane there, and then about 20, 30 feet before that roundabout, it says no more bike lane, and you're in the roundabout. You gotta fend for yourself. So at that point, you're like, oh, I'm in the wrong place. I should have.
Yeah, I feel kind of uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think that's a good thing for us to look at.
And maybe like route the bike lane to the street before and go across. So, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, in my mind on these, you know, on these projects that were identified, I think it's something that we're going to have a closer look at and look at some options and do an options analysis to see which one, you know, which option makes the most sense, and then try to pursue it is what we'll do.
I do have one more thing, kind of along those same lines, so I'll say it now. With the vehicle portion of this plan, this is very common, right? We do a trip count, data capture, level of service analysis, the demand modeling and projection, that kind of thing. But then when it comes to other, or particularly active transportation modes, and by that I mean more than just cycling, as it's often interpreted as, right? Pedestrian, that kind of thing. It's much more passive, I guess. We don't do all those things. It's, and I know that's totally typical, but I would love if South Jordan got a little ahead of the pack in terms of like doing, you know, comfort type analysis or that sort of thing to gather this kind of data. I can give, so, if just looking at the data we've got here, there's discrepancies again between the model and reality, right? Like on South Jordan Parkway, it shows that there's a bike lane, but if you actually ride South Jordan Parkway, it's full of cars, right? And
that's the segment from the east side of Daybreak up that hill. Is that the one you're talking about on South Jordan Parkway?
Yeah, that's kind of where it starts. Yeah. But I'm thinking more closer to the west end.
Like okay.
Let's see. Well, pretty much in the middle, actually.
Okay.
Kind of around Harmon's and stuff.
Yep. Okay.
And I mean, there's all those parked cars in the bike lane, and then to the off of the street, there's like a ground that's like perfect for a what would you call that? Like off street bike.
Like behind curb multi use path, something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, and it's just there. But it's like gravelly and muddy because sprinklers are going. And I've tried riding that, and you're going along. And we've got all the pieces there. But point is, I think we would see that kind of thing if we had the data telling us that these are issues that need looked at. That's, yeah.
I think that's a great comment and definitely a deeper dive than what we've done, you know, in this transportation master plan. But it is what we're trying to dive into as part of that Shields Lane solutions development study that we're doing. But I mean, that's very specific to Shields Lane, but, you know, looking at the level of stress along that corridor and, you know, the very, very specific obstacles, you know, that are happening along that. And so hopefully, depending upon how that study plays out, we can take some of the lessons learned from there and apply it to the overall active transportation plan would be my hope.
Yeah. We did the general plan, and we had that feedback mechanism where someone on a map could point to something. I'd love to see that in the next transportation general plan, because there's a lot of people I think who care about transportation and points of transportation that they're familiar with that we should probably collect. Maybe that's what you're talking about. It's almost like the voice of the citizen more actively brought into the general plan so that they're, you know, give us that confidence for.
Yeah, well, I'm a computer programmer, but I believe that there are ways of analyzing like the transportation network, but like more pedestrian, cyclist sort of focus. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. But gathering public input, obviously, that's huge too, right? Yeah.
How do you, like, in doing that, like, this is the big elephant in the room is that the dollars and the effort goes towards the roadways because that is where most of it goes. How do you have to balance that in a plan like this? How much priority or emphasis can you give to active transportation versus surface, you know, I guess roadway transport, I don't know what the term is, non-active transportation.
Yeah.
Well, if you go from a 2% for transit and you're hoping for 4%, what's the active transportation? Is it less than 1%?
Well, for work, but I see lots of people running around Oak Lake and stuff like that, you know, so I don't know what.
But again, going to the budgetary impact is, do you focus more dollars towards something that benefits a very small percentage compared to.
Right, and I just don't know how to balance it.
I think it's a good question, like what the priority is on active transportation versus vehicle traffic. And that's the question I'm asking the public as part of this Shields Lane study that we're doing is, hey, how much space do we want to allocate for the vehicles? How much space do we want to allocate for the active transportation? Realizing that it all comes at a price. Right. You know, either you're less comfortable as a pedestrian and a cyclist, or you're dealing with delays as a, you know, somebody in a vehicle, and trying to understand that balance is what we're doing in that study. But on the master transportation plan, I mean, as far as like money allocation, I mean, we have a direct stream of funding with the impact fees, you know, for road widening. We don't have a direct stream of funding for the active transportation. That's more grants that we seek. And, you know, if the city chooses to budget money, you know, out of the general fund for it. That kind of gives you an idea that, yes, it's highly prioritized for the road widenings and active transportation we fight for.
Commissioner Bishop, you're talking a lot about the quality of the experience, right? The quality of your bicycle ride, the quality of your walking versus the quantity of bike lanes and the quantity of those types of things. And I think those are best handled when you do a study like what Jeremy's talking about. I think one of the many good things about the city is you have a lot of people out walking. Who know? Hey, that sprinkler's always broken and it's always wet there, right? And so you can get some of that feedback where in other cities you wouldn't, because no one walks past that broken sprinkler, right? And so it's unique, and it's a neat problem to have to say, hey, I walk by this all the time, and this is always a problem, versus just you have that problem and the one person who maybe is in a wheelchair or is sight impaired or something like that is the only person using it, right? And so that's a great comment on the quality of those facilities. Yeah.
I'd like to add one more thing in terms of, sorry, this will be small, but we've, as you know, humans, we've been building like car-centric cities and stuff for about 70 years now, right? And so there's a lot of examples that we can look at cities that have grown to, you know, be the size that we're looking at in a couple of decades. And so we pretty much know how it's going to turn out. And nobody's been able to make that kind of city building approach work very well. It comes down to geometry, and it just doesn't, like, you end up in a place that you don't want to live, if that makes sense. So I understand the, like, currently we're, you know, usage levels are low and that kind of thing. If if we just keep going the way we're going, we're going to have a South Jordan that, you know, not people aren't going to enjoy living in, frankly, is the way I see it. So, yeah, I don't know. That's my take on it.
Thanks. I know Daybreak is making a huge effort to change that perspective for those areas in terms of bike experience, walk experience, you know, walk and roll, they call it, kind of call it now, just not just bikes, but other means. And being able to do that, you know, you go to a city like New York and they do have very specific level of service standards for pedestrians, like density of pedestrians. So they, you know, you get to some of the big areas where they're dense population and they do have those very specific level of service type measures. But most of the communities in Utah, we don't have those types of densities. Downtown Salt Lake, they start to have some of that. But even there, it's not the density of New York City or Chicago or LA or some of those other downtown environments. But
does walk and roll, does that include things like scooters, e-scooters,
yeah,
e-bikes, the things that are 20 miles per hour or less that are not considered motor vehicles? Is that the mm-hmm. idea is that people might use motorized 20-mile-an-hour things to do shorter trips without having to get in their car?
Skateboards, scooters, wheelchairs, anything that has wheels, right? Roller skates, I don't know. whatever you need to get from here to there, you know, short trip-wise, so.
Beyond okay. just the scooter issue, though, and you brought up Daybreak, is, you know, trying to put a focus on, hey, let's make those short trips walking or rolling. But how does that compare with sorry, just looping back to the very first slide we looked at with people coming in and out of South Jordan to work, right? It would be swell if we could all walk and roll to work. If you're living in Daybreak and you walk and roll to work, but that means you need jobs in Daybreak
yeah.
that are
yeah.
equivalent to the jobs that you're commuting to. And I know that's beyond the scope of transportation planning, right? But it seems like something that should be interconnected with transportation planning, right? As we're planning commercial applications and jobs, you know, when are those conversations coming together so that we're building communities and opportunities for people to legitimately walk and roll their way to work without having to commute?
So the Wasatch Front Regional Council does, and I forget what it's called, but it's their long range plan where they're looking at urban centers and density. And in the year 2050 for the Daybreak, downtown Daybreak area, right, the area that's basically between Bingham Rim Road and Daybreak Parkway on both sides of the Mountain View Corridor, that has densities that are as high as you see in Sandy and downtown Salt Lake. And so that plan, land use-wise, is robust in terms of mixes of land use and that type of stuff, that you start to be able, again, to draw people away from just going downtown Salt Lake, and they're now coming to an urban center, you know, in this area. So you start to attract those jobs and those types of things. I know that's Daybreak's vision, and I believe that's, you know, the city is on board with that vision as well. So,
and, Commissioner Wimmer, your comment ties directly with how our general plan feeds into yep. our transportation master plan. You know, our general plan with the planned land use, that we take that information, and that's what is the input into our traffic model, you know, to determine the trip generation and things from these different land areas. And so really, really, you know, trying to determine those employment centers and plan around that, that's the general plan is what we're trying to attack there.
Has there been any discussion about house swapping so that somebody who lives in Salt Lake who wants to commute down to Daybreak can swap with somebody who does the vice versa?
Sounds like a great
okay.
new business model. Airbnb something.
Do you guys have any idea of, like, with your trip generation models, like what percentage is actually commuting versus all the other things we drive for? Does that make sense? Is a question.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. And it's at a regional level, but you have what's called a home-based work trip, and you have a home-based shopping trip, and you have different types of trips, school trips and things like that. And the model looks at those a little bit differently.
And those were like every 10 years. Is that what you said they measure it?
Yes, they use like those. They use those household surveys to help calibrate the regional model.
Are those aligned with like census?
They are aligned with census data. Yep. I guess the last map that I'll talk to you about, and I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, is there's a whole bunch. The city has a whole bunch of great data sets. This allows you to look at them together. And so, for example, I'm just going to show this one. You know, one of the things that is talked about regularly is how well are our streets connected. So if you live here and you want to go, you know, to this church over here, can you just walk through? Can you bike through? Can you drive through? Or are you going out onto an arterial and then another arterial and all the way around? That street connectivity. So as just something that we took a quick look at was, well, what are there? Are there opportunities perhaps to improve connectivity? And if so, where might those be? And this is not a plan to do that. It's just starting to look at, okay, well, where are opportunities to connect the street networks better? So that's on here. That's
it is in there. And just keep in mind when you look at this map, it's a recommendation. It's not saying we're going to do it. It's just an opportunity for the city to consider. The residents have not been contacted, and I don't know if they would be on board with
totally
these ideas.
Totally predicted my question. I was going to ask, how do you get resident buy-in? Because yeah. This is where people get really flustered.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Is when they think, oh, our street's finally going through. We were promised it was never going to be done.
Right, right.
But why do we ever even make that promise? That's the part I don't understand.
And we keep putting up signs saying that the street will continue, and they keep removing the signs. So it's a never-ending battle.
Yeah, all right.
But I did appreciate what WCG did here, because I think it's a good thing for us to keep in mind, because there are some of these locations that I think it would have very minimal impact. And even if we weren't to connect the travel lanes, just having a sidewalk extension would be great for the neighborhood. So they're not always having to go just out the same entrance, but they can go out both ends of their neighborhood. So anyway, something to consider.
And then also the map not only has things for what you have in the city, but it also shows, it'll show like the transit plans regionally. Let's see, which one was I looking at here? This one. Gonna make a liar out of myself. That is just point projects. Here's the line projects. So now you can start to see from the standpoint of regionally, you know, where some of these projects are going and how they're connecting, whether it's trails or transit, some of those. You'd asked, are we connecting with trails from other cities? Those types of things. So this shows some of the regional plans as well, and you can turn these layers on and off, and anyone can get on there and turn them on and off, but it's more of just a resource versus anything that's a recommendation or a part of the transportation master plan. We just thought you have some great GIS layers, we'll put them in there, those that relate to transit or those that relate to transportation. So any other questions? That's kind of the end of the story map that's available to you and the public.
I had one that I don't think has come up yet. And that is, as we do these multi-use lanes, bike paths, et cetera, you showed us all sorts. Do we define what's considered a bicycle? And I think maybe I'm just not educated, because you seem to indicate like a 20 mile per hour and lower.
I got educated on to yesterday. So.
Okay. There's such a disparity in what people consider a bike, and especially where you've got mixed use that includes walking and you talked about like real bikers don't like certain kinds of shared lanes because people don't go the right direction or they're slow. But then you also bring in this element of a motorized, honest to goodness, it's really just a small motorcycle.
Yeah. That.
But I didn't see that addressed in this. And so I don't know if that's just a standard that people in transportation know.
Yeah, I think on the trails, I probably need to educate myself on what is allowed on the trails. But what I've seen though is like at the entrance to the canal trails, we post, you know, that only bicycles, no like motorcycles. I don't remember exactly how they phrase it. I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly how it's addressed in the code either. It does, we don't address that in this master transportation plan though.
And then kind of along those lines, but maybe too soon, but do you anticipate at some point you'll need to address self-driving cars? I don't know.
It's a good question. I know UDOT, they used to have a full-time individual that was dedicated to.
They still do. Yeah.
Just watching that technology.
Emerging technology. Yeah. Yeah,
the automated vehicles. And I go to training, maybe a 1 hour training a year on the technology. And it's just, it's difficult to say because there's some projections that show that it'll put more cars on the road. There's some, most of the projections I've heard of is that there will be more vehicles on the road. But I don't know. I don't know at this point because of all the deliveries and they'll be more like taxis. There's a lot of theories about how it'll play out. I don't know if Tim, if you have more.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, you start to look at a freeway, which has about a capacity of about 2,200 cars per lane per hour. That's kind of the max capacity. If you have self-driving vehicles that are monitoring the car in front of them and the car in back, you can get 10,000 cars on a, you know, per lane per hour. So you start thinking about that. But the other issue is you drive up to work, you park your car, and then someone calls and your car drives away and picks them up and then comes back and parks before you go home, right? So you know, there's a lot of, like Jeremy said, there's a lot of different opinions on how that's all going to play out. Okay. One of the things that though is becoming more relevant is the idea of curb management. And so you know, you have parking and unloading, you have different ride sharing platforms and things like that. And so how do you designate and manage your curb space in critical areas? And that is something that there's a lot of additional research on. I don't know that we have anywhere in the city where, you know, those types of things apply in terms of density and usage of the curb, but that's something that's come out of people looking at automated vehicles, technology, and loading and unloading and those types of things, is how do you manage the curb space? So
I think that might come up a little bit as you think about like striping 40th West all the way and there's no curb for example, I mean, not even self-driving, but just thinking about Ride UTA when I've used the UTA on demand, like they want to pull over, but there's no place to pull over if there's no apron or shoulder,
right?
No shoulder, and so they have to pull in to a neighborhood and go out. And so anyway, I think maybe that's an opportunity to think of an intermediate step beyond self-driving cars is these on-demand services.
Yeah, those are good thoughts. When I think of curb management, I think of, I was in Paris last year, and I was just amazed at how they manage their curbs, you know, designated spots for scooters, for the rental cars, the residential cars. It was pretty amazing how they did that.
So did that conclude the staff report and overview?
That does. Yeah, that covers the transportation master plan, yes.
Commissioners, would you object to us doing public comment just to make sure that we do it tonight? Get it out of the way, and then we'll come back to discussion and questions.
I have no problem. Can you go back to one? Sorry, I forgot your name.
Tim.
So, Tim, can you go back to that little slider?
Level service. Service? Yeah. Let me go down there. And did you want to look at 2050, or what year were you thinking of?
We can look at 2050, or either way.
There's 2033 and 2050. Sure. Okay.
So I believe we had a different vendor. Do we have a different consulting group that did the 2019, 2020?
Different consulting group, but same engineer.
Same engineer?
Jeremy Searle was kind of the lead on our transportation master plan in 2019, and now he's working for WCG with Tim. So.
Okay. So I like the aspect that we're unifying with what I believe Daybreak has used, the same consultant, mm-hmm. and bring that together as we think about that. Because when I look at this map and I look at the level of service changes, and I look at the, for lack of a better term, older South Jordan and newer South Jordan, or East and West, there's more, if we don't do anything, there's more, can you scroll all the way to the?
Yes.
Left, I guess.
That way?
The other way.
Other way, okay, thank you.
No level of service, you look at how much red there is on there, and I go, and you go to the right, and you look on the Daybreak side, and the network is healthy, reasonably healthy. And if you, and so I like the fact that, you know, when I talked before about, like, how do you know you've built something well? You know, like, how do you measure your recommendations after? I haven't seen data presented by consultants and municipalities that give me that level of confidence. This is about the closest thing I've seen that gives me that level of confidence in looking at this model and seeing the level of service stability through a wide scenario and wide range of time. And so I appreciate that, and I give credit towards the design of what's been done in Daybreak towards stability of service as we look at this improvements we want to make on the other side. So thank you.
Thanks.
That's it.
All right. At this time, we're going to open up the floor to public comment. I will open it up to those that are in our auditorium staff. If any of you as a citizen would like to say anything, we'll give you the floor. Okay. Did we have anybody else online? Okay. All right, then I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commissioners. Commissioners, I'm sure there's still questions. I know that we had talked before the meeting about possibly wanting some more time with this, but I would like to ask staff, when does city council plan to hear this item?
So I was targeting the first meeting in August, but I totally understand the position I put you in. And I apologize for that. So there were a lot of pages to read there, and you had very little time to do it. So if you feel that we need to push it out, then I don't have any concerns with that. We can work around it.
All right. That said, I feel like the conversation this evening has been really detailed and probably talked through a lot of the concerns I had. I had one editorial comment to make. It mentioned a list of items that can be used for traffic calming measures, and it included on-street parking. I personally do not love on-street parking. I hear from residents of Daybreak all the time how much they dislike on-street parking as a traffic calming measure. So that's just my editorial statement. I really hope the city doesn't adopt that as a standard policy, at least where I live. So that's all I had to say. Who's the most excited to get started? And we'll go to that end. Mr. Bishop, Ms. Bevan says it's you.
Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted to discuss, comment on, ask questions?
Let's see. I'm curious about the Mountain View Corridor crossing, what that might look like in terms of like active transportation. Does that make sense? Crossing Bangor is not much fun. I was just wondering if we know what that might look like.
Asking a really good question, Commissioner Bishop, because we're actively talking to UDOT right now, trying to understand what that's going to look like. Right now, UDOT, I'm assuming you're referring to the major crossings like at Lake Avenue and South Jordan Parkway, yeah. Getting across Mountain View Corridor right there. So that'll be a bridge structure. You know, the main line will go underneath. Lake Avenue and South Jordan Parkway, the main freeway will go underneath. But as far as like the center running cycle track, right now in the 30% drawings that UDOT has issued, they're proposing a 14-foot wide pathway there in the center. The city's trying to push back because existing there's about 26 feet between landscaping and the two lanes, you know, the one lane for kind of the cyclists and the other lane for the pedestrians. And so the city's pushing back, trying to get UDOT to go go wider than 14 feet to more closely match the existing 26 feet wide that's there. But that's kind of an ongoing discussion that's happening right now.
Cool. That's all I had. Yeah, thank you.
Good plan. I want to thank WGC and the city for putting the work in this. I know it's a requirement every 5 to 6 years that we have to do. And so this hopefully will give residents planning to move to South Jordan who live here today once it is adopted plans. But try to echo the things, you know, on-street parking, if we can, whatever way, discourage that, especially on the western part of the city. And I think that would help address maybe the comments you made about the quality of the active transportation paths that we have as well. I think that's probably a hindrance that some people have when they are riding their bikes or walking, that they have to dart into the active roadways on that as well. So look at that as well. And then like Commissioner Wimmer mentioned, we can more incorporate the future, you know, the land use of the future commercial, work with, you know, business development or whoever that might be, so we can actually forecast and put more priority on those areas. Like downtown Daybreak, where there's going to be a lot of transportation coming into in the future, if there's going to be other opportunities. But I think this is a good start on that. Obviously, we know with the master plan or the general plan, we know that this is not the Bible, and so there will be modifications, and a future commission that I won't be on will be reviewing the next one in 5 years, so that'll be good as well. So that's all I have.
All right. Yeah, I just want to, I don't know when you started this project, but thank you for putting it all together. Transportation networks are some of the hardest things to do, technically. I remember when Mayor Rocky of Salt Lake County or Salt Lake City, when he was mayor, said, ran on, I'm going to make it so that you can have no stoplights when you come in. And then he was educated about the realities of that. So I appreciate the constraints that you have to operate under and the thoughtfulness. I did get distracted by the application, so I didn't read the full report. That being said, I feel like with today's conversation or tonight's conversation, I feel comfortable enough for myself making a recommendation to City Council and also reaching out to constituents in my area. They can always give feedback to City Council in August, and having the conversations we did allowed me to better understand the areas in my in the district that I represent. So thank you.
Okay. So I also got distracted by the website, like you, but I did read the full staff report and can attest that it supports everything we discussed tonight, and then just gives specifics about what the projects are and the phasing and cost, et cetera. So, Mr. Wimmer.
Again, thank you. This is awesome. A lot of fun for me. It's a big toy. Topic I enjoy. Wanted to just ask about the phase one timeline. I know there's a lot of projects listed out in phase one. I know it's a 10-year time frame generally, but is there any planned prioritization? So you can say, hey, this subset of projects might be completed in 1 to 3 years, 3 to 5 years, anything like that in terms of data that we can look at as well.
Sorry, I was just scrolling to our phase one list. We don't really have any, and Tim, chime in if I get this wrong, but not that I'm aware of, we don't have any list that kind of prioritizes it beyond the phase one list, other than my knowledge of knowing, hey, this project is funded, you know, in the long term with grant funding, this project's a higher priority because this is happening, you know, I know those details, but they're not documented at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't have a whole lot to add, but I had the extreme privilege. Sorry, I got braces, so I sound ridiculous. I apologize. I had the privilege of driving from Kelowna, British Columbia, home for 15 hours on Sunday, so I did get to read this report. So thank you for providing me with something to do on that very boring passenger princess drive. But I do appreciate the detail in this. The discussion tonight has given all of the answers to the questions I had, and obviously brought a more robust thought process around how this works and what the city's doing with it. So I don't have an issue with a recommendation tonight either.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion, or are we ready for a motion? Whether that be to table for further thought, question answering, or to send a recommendation to City Council.
Can I make a comment on that? I feel like, you know, I can make a recommendation tonight and feel comfortable with it. My only concern is so little public comment, right? And not having a chance to hear from constituents of anywhere. So if we've only had a very short time to see it, I wonder if...
Sure, but how did this get noticed? I thought I got an email, or maybe one of the monthly emails included a link. Like, I've seen some traffic information distributed.
Yeah, so this went through the normal noticing. In addition to, Craig, we noticed it like two weeks in advance.
It got noticed, the 10-day in advance notice, and was posted on the Utah Public Notice website, mm-hmm. and on the city's website. Those are the only two places by law that we have to, we can't send out notices to, you know, 27,000 residents. So,
how long has that storyboard been on the, you said it's on the city website, right? How long has it been up on the website?
It's been up for quite a while.
Has it been linked to?
But it's not until this meeting, you know, it wasn't really advertised to the public. Sure. So, because we're just wrapping up the master plan now, you know, okay. out of draft form.
Can I ask just one question? Page one of the staff report. You have the recommended motion, but then you have two alternatives, and it looks like alternative number one is the same as the recommended motion. Can you just maybe explain why that's listed as an alternative, or is that just our two options that we would have?
Subliminal messaging.
Do it or do it.
Do it or do it. Do it not. I'm just wondering if there's any, you know, difference between what's in our recommended motion or in alternative number one. I don't see a difference.
Oh, I'm sorry. I may have mistyped that.
Or is there a third option that's not listed?
No, I was just thinking the alternatives. I guess my thought process there was that you you had two options.
Okay.
I guess the way I interpreted alternatives was more what option that.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that there was truly a third option.
No, good question.
So, Madam Chair, based on that, I'd like to make a motion, please, and we can go from there if we table or not. I'm move it based on the staff report and the very detailed discussion that we've had this evening, that we forward a positive recommendation to the City Council for the approval of Resolution 2024-31, adopting the Transportation Master Plan for the City of South Jordan.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there any discussion on that motion? Whether that be a hesitance to vote on it tonight or not? All right, then I'm willing to second that motion. Ms. Crookston, can we get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollist?
Yes.
Commissioner Wimmer?
Aye.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
And Commissioner Bishop?
Yes.
Okay. This item will go to City Council with a 6-0 positive recommendation. And I'd like to thank everybody for their time tonight. Mr. Taylor, thank you for joining us and having all of the answers to our questions. We appreciate it. And Jeremy, I enjoyed you leading a staff report.
All right.
Thanks, Tim. could you ask your question, Mr. Gedge?
Yes, so generally I asked for our next meeting, just to confirm, do we have a second meeting in July? And if not, what does our first meeting in August look like?
We do not have a second meeting in July, since it'll be the night before a holiday. And that one was canceled quite a long time ago. It was never on the schedule. So and we do have two items already on for the August, let's see, August
9th, I think.
11th?
Hold on. Today's the 9th.
14th? 13th. Okay, August 13th meeting. Two items on there. One is an administrative and one's the legislative. It's someone who's asking to change text in our one section of our code. So that's, I tell you, staff is not supporting that. So that code text changed, so it'll be interesting.
Who's proposing it?
Resident. So
is this like the flag lot? I think that's the only time I've seen a text.
No, it's not for flag lot.
We have change. Well, no, but that we have that side lot
with the landscaping.
Yeah, but we have that one.
Oh, okay. Time. It's just rare that we have
a city applicant
make a change to. Yeah. Yes, it's an applicant.
Sorry.
Interesting. Okay.
So, and there might be other ones come up because it's still, a month away. So there might be other items. I know there's. I personally have at least two Daybreak items that will probably be on there, and there may be others as well.
Can I make a polite ask if we have something similar to a transportation master plan change that we get it more than the Friday in advance?
How about 10-day notice?
Yeah.
Send it out at the same time. Although you check
the bus, but
that sounds like a good idea when you have something that's that big and you have to go through it that many pages. You probably should have as much opportunity as someone who follows our website on a daily basis. Otherwise, you'd have to do that, but not too many people do that. So, yes, we can probably make that happen. So,
even if it's a draft of the staff report or something.
It's interesting when we update the general plan, the Planning Commission will have a lot more activity with it because you'll be special meetings. It'll go on for months that you'll be involved with that. It's these appendices to the general plan that you still have to make a recommendation to City Council, but you don't have as much opportunity to review everything. But we'll try to do that in the future when we do this, to give you 2 weeks or a month or whatever. So you can be up on it and have most of your questions answered before the meeting, if possible. So,
I think that allows us to reach out to the Facebook groups in our neighborhoods or wherever social media contacts we have, and we can ask and kind of facilitate conversations.
Oh, that's a good point. I love the feedback. So,
all right, commissioners, any other business? All right, then I move that we adjourn this meeting.
Second. Commissioner Campbell.
Favor?
Yes.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? All right.
We're out of it.
We'll see you in a month.
Must be midnight.